Welcome to the Lovejoy Hour, sponsored by Cook 100 Degree Boiling Hot Water, straight from your kitchen tap. Mine does filtered water and sparkling filtered water too, both of which are chilled. I can't imagine living without my cooker. I absolutely love it. For more details, go to cooker.co.uk and you can see the different models they've got there. Before I introduce today's guest, I had an interesting email through this week and I thought I'd read it out for you. Good evening, Tim. I'm a regular listener and after listening to your recent episode with Alistair, that's Alistair Parvin, by the way, from WikiHouse, I needed to email. I'm a structural engineer. So Alistair Parvin talked all about housing problems and housing issues we've got in Britain at the moment and his solutions. If you fancy it, listen back to that one. It's very good. I'm a structural engineer, he goes on to say. I have keen interest in architecture. I've worked on many housing developments and for many years have become disillusioned with the industry I work in. I love many of the points discussed with Alistair. However, I do not share his optimism that things will change. I say this as the change has to come from central government. That will never happen until the Tory donating developers have no sway to government policy. I worked on a 115 plot development several years ago and in discussion with the developer asked why they don't supply as standard a water butt and a compost bin for each house. I assume a water butt because I don't know and I haven't done any research. I should have Googled it, but I assume a water butt is one of those things which collects water and then they use on the gardens, I think. I don't think it turns into drinking water, but that is what I think it is. Who knows? Anyway, a simple thing, he goes on to say, a simple thing that would, in my opinion, have a big impact. The answer was, it's too expensive and we don't have to. Too expensive? The buying power the big developers have, they could supply both these for approximately £10 per house. It doesn't stop at housing, however. I'm currently working on a very large industrial unit, 150 metres long by 50 metres wide. It's on the outskirts of a very cycle-friendly city. Car park for 125 cars is on the development. However, planning permission for a cycle shed is yet to be approved. Yet Boris has a charade dropping our CO2. It's a tick box lie. Rant over. Love your podcast. Great episode. Great people you have on. Certainly opens my mind to some subjects. Been great at opening discussion with friends and family too. Keep up the job. Martin, thank you, Martin, for that. I thoroughly enjoyed reading that and food for thought. Yeah, it always seems like we as the customers, as the we're champing at the bit to move things on, but the reality is it's you got to get through business and then law and then the government and da, 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 da. Very depressing. But if you have anything to say, send it to tim@lovejoy.co.uk. Today's hour is 15 questions to Alistair Green. Alistair Green is an actor, writer and comedian. I became aware of Alistair through his short one-man sketches he posts on Instagram and Twitter. They satire people he observes in everyday life. His observations are very good. I'm a big fan of his. He kept me smiling through lockdowns and continues to do so now. Do you know what I would recommend if you're about to listen to this? You're probably on your smartphone anyway or your computer. Just quickly go to Instagram or Twitter, Google Alistair Green if you don't know his sketches and have a quick look at a few of them. It's brilliant. It's funny. It's just him in his flat. He just does great characters. And it'll probably give more meaning to this conversation we're about to have. I'm sure you might know who he is. I'm sure if you've watched one, you've probably stayed tuned and watched them all. They're very funny. Let's meet him. Here's Alistair Green. Alistair, thank you for joining me today. How are you?
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Tim. How are you?
Good. I hope you're prepared because I'm not.
No, I've got nothing. Absolutely nothing. Good.
As she was
in the list of questions, and I haven't got a single answer to any of them.
Well, I love that because I did when I emailed you and said, "Can you do the podcast?" and you said, "Yeah," and then you sent me a message going, "You're not going to suddenly hit me with a load of prep, are you?" which really amused me. It's like, I'll do it, but I just don't want to do any prep. I didn't want you to do any prep, but that did amuse me.
The worst thing was you said there's no prep, and then you sent me about 500 questions.
Yeah, but there's no prep for them. It's just, they're all just crap. The first question I'm going to ask you is, are you or were you a mod? I mean, you don't need preparation for that. You just got to be honest.
Yeah, well, the answer to that is no. What's the next question? It's going to be like this. It's going to last 7 minutes.
I want to expand on the mod bit first. Why weren't you a mod?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't and that's a little bit. Well, I guess mod is one of those kind of perennial fashion things. There's always been mods, right? Right. Well, you know, it's always maybe Britpop brought it back a bit.
Yes.
And now it's become permanent. You know, you get younger people going, I'm going to dress like this. I'm going to wear a Harrington and, you know, my desert boots or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And it's a staple look now that anyone can kind of adopt. Whereas it had an original time, didn't it? That kind of post-punk sort of.
Well, it had
time.
Two, didn't it? Because it had 1 years ago, and then it, like in the 60s, and then it sort of had another go in the 80s with the Jam and all that, late 70s, early 80s of the Jam and all that lot. And then it had another go with Britpop. And then I love this question because some bloke came up to me recently. All right, Tim. Yeah. I said, hi, yeah. He goes, I'm a mod like you too. And I was thinking, I'm a mod. I'm 53 years old. How can I be a mod? Because in my eyes, the idea of a mod is like it's Paul Weller and then kids in parkas and back when I was a kid.
So why did he assume you were a mod then?
I suppose because I liked Britpop. I suppose I was on. I don't know. I'm not sure. Anyway, it's not about me. It's about you. And it's were you anything? Right. Were you a casual? Were you a punk?
When I was a kid, I guess I sort of got into that kind of mid-90s sort of Britpop thing, although I preferred kind of weirder American stuff, I think, at that time. I think because there was a kind of clear distinction in the sort of mid to late 90s between if you were an indie kid like Pulp and Oasis and Blur and all that stuff, or you were a grunger and you were into Nirvana and Pearl Jam and all that kind of stuff, or you were obviously heavier and you were into the whatever, you know, the heavier side of metal music and all that stuff, which again is another perennial music style stroke dress taste thing, like goths. It's always going to be goths.
What bands were you into then? I didn't expect this conversation to go this way, by the way, but I'm doing it.
Well, no, that's a good question. I think I was into kind of Dinosaur Jr. and that kind of thing. I never got into the kind of moody Pearl Jam, Soundgarden type of thing. Even Nirvana. I think I liked Nirvana. I had all their albums and stuff, but it always felt a bit kind of heavy. So I got into Dinosaur Jr. I don't know why. I thought they were kind of really interesting, even though it's just one guy noodling around on a guitar. And then I discovered Sonic Youth, and that was a kind of gateway to other things, and that was really interesting. And then the big band for me at that time was Pavement, because it was doing kind of very weird esoteric stuff like Sonic Youth, but it was almost a joke. It was almost falling apart. That early stuff anyway. It just sounded very DIY, which really appealed to me. Or they kind of left in a lot of the errors, you know, and sort of almost showing the workings of it. Anything that's not too polished, and I still like that kind of stuff. Anything that sounds like you can knock it up, you know, in your own bedroom or whatever, is I prefer that kind of music.
I know I'm going to do one of those really brilliant links into you and your career, and especially your stuff online. I mentioned in my intro how I really got into you during the pandemic and started following you, and you just amused me a lot. I love your take on the characters out there that we all know and love. And
you sound like a king.
A king.
You amused me a lot, Jester.
You did. And the thing is about it is sometimes I thought, oh God, that's a bit me, that is. So you managed to correct my stance in life, my position in life. But that's all a bit rough around the edges. It feels like sometimes, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but it feels like sometimes you're making up as you go along, which is why I quite like it. Well, not quite like it. That's why I do like it. It sometimes feels like you thought, oh, I've got another joke here. How much prep are you doing with these videos before you actually put them out?
Well, it depends what it is. So if I do a live thing like I did yesterday, I did an Instagram live for an Easter Monday kind of joke. That has no zero prep. So I just switch on the camera and really just start. The yesterday's joke was obviously that I'm the son of God and I've come back to life and what have you. And then that's just talking nonsense for 40 minutes or whatever it is. So some of the videos are very, they come together very quickly. But they're nearly all, they start with a single phrase in my head, and then I kind of work it out in my head, and then I record it on my own. So I don't write it down, and then I watch it. I'll watch it back once, maybe I'll do it twice, and then I'll go, oh, that's what it is, and then I can do it a third time, and then it stays like that, really.
But
sometimes you just do it once. You know, sometimes I'll switch on the camera and it will be the first thing in my head.
But some of them have a better production. Production in the loose terms, it's usually a hat or something. But I mean, or a wig. Right. But some of them have production in them, like Punk Squirrel IPA.
Right.
Yeah, that takes it. You've obviously had to edit that. That was great.
Yeah. Well, when I first started doing these videos, I was doing all single takes, which I still do some like that, that are kind of a scene with a character and what have you talking to other people. But they're a single take with no breaks. And that was mainly because I didn't know how to edit. And then I got iMovie, or I mostly use my phone for editing now. The technology is so good now. But I think if I just didn't want to spend too long on that stuff. I think it's quite funnier if it looks shit. And the other thing is now, one of the things is there's quite a lot of people doing things online now on their phones. And you watch TV comedy now or sketch comedy, it looks very overproduced now, or very like, you're like, oh, this looks way too slick. I'm used to like watching people dicking around on a phone, you know?
Yeah, jump cuts and stuff like that. I love that. Squirrel punk. Which way round is it? Punk Squirrel IPA is that way around, isn't it? Punk Squirrel IPA. I love it. Yeah, blah. I love all that. And it's such a great observation, that, because obviously I work on a show on Sunday mornings, a cooking show, and there's so many of these guys now and women who've like, I've given up my job in the city, and now I'm making a craft lager, I've got a vegan cookbook, I've got I'm witnessing it all the time. And we used to call them the skinny jeans brigade, because they okay, yeah, I was in a suit and now I got skinny jeans, and the skinny jeans are out now, but when they were fashionable 10 years ago, whatever, and everybody seemed to be doing that. And it's like, the reason why people do craft beer or gin or veganism is because it's cheap, right? The reason why they don't, hey, I'm giving up my job in the city to make wine, is because it takes for fucking ever and massive investment. Whereas you can make an IPA within a week, I think. So that's why they all did it.
Right.
Yeah, that's why it's gin. That's why it's never whiskey. Because if it was whiskey, it's like, I've got to find a bloody load of barrels and I've got to age the stuff and it's going to cost me an absolute fortune.
Yeah.
Whereas gin, hey, I've got a gin. And you can knock it up within 2 weeks. Yeah. You've got a gin, and you've got to put Punk Squirrel on it. And then you've got your...
Yeah.
By the way, if anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about, just Google it. It comes up, Alistair Green, Punk Squirrel. It's very funny. It's like a take on all these guys who are giving up their jobs in the city to spend their time on Instagram, basically.
Well, it kind of started out as a... You might have, if I can say the brand, everyone thinks it's about BrewDog, but it started out as about a company called Beaver Town that made this beer called Neck Oil, and it just made me laugh. I just thought, that's so lame, like, grab a neck oil, like gasoline, calling it after gasoline. But the thing that made me laugh was, the reason I did that video was, I looked them up and I was like, they're owned by Heineken or some Budweiser thing. This is a multi-million pound company, the same as BrewDog now, who are owned by whoever, but they sold out all their shares, and now the guy's a millionaire or whatever. But the joke of the video is really, it's partly what you're saying about, yeah, I'm going to start my own craft beer company, I'm an independent punk rock kind of a guy. And then you find out, you know, the joke is, it's a multi-million pack, you might as well work for Budweiser or whatever, because they're owned by them. So it's that joke of, and that's not all, obviously not all craft beer companies do that, but that's essentially a joke.
Every startup now, basically, all my mates, every time I speak to them, they've started something up, or I meet someone, they're all doing the same thing. And the idea is, we're going to sell out. That no one's doing it to actually make the product. They're doing it to sell to Budweiser. Right. Interestingly, with Beaver Town, though, I was speaking about Beaver Town the other day, that neck oil stuff. Because if you go into the pub, I think what they've done is so amazing. And you look at all the, what do you call those, like the beer taps. They're all sort of like pretty... whatever, your Guinness one and everything, and then you've got a skull on a like a yellow plastic skull, and it kind of looks kind of cool. And then the glasses, they've got them so they're actually, they've got paint all over them. I don't know if you've seen all the
stuff. Right, yeah, I've seen them, they're branded, yeah.
And I was talking to one of the guys in this bar I was in, and I said, how often are those glasses stolen? He goes, oh, all the time. They know that's what's going to happen. And I thought, it's kind of like they're making the nicest glasses. They're basically making them so that people steal them and stick them in their house. They've got advertising then in everybody's house, you know, that Beaver Town.
Yeah.
And I think it's working for him. It seems to be selling out really well, that beer.
Right. So, you know, it's popular.
It seems to be doing that. So what are you at the moment? Are you an actor? Are you a comic? Are you I don't know what you would call yourself online. There's an online comedian. What would you say you were?
Bit of a character. Bit of a quirky old character. I think I do all of those things, and I kind of do, I don't know how I describe what I do. I do something that, I don't know. I'm sort of carving out my own kind of genre for what I do. And then I also show these videos that I make. I compile them into films. So I show them in the cinemas, like I'm a proper film director. And, you know, with a Q&A and things like that. So I do festivals and things like that. So I do bits of acting, bits of writing, bits of performing, you know. Bits of trying to make my own kind of genre of things with these films that I'm showing and stuff. I don't know. I mean, basically what I'm saying is I can't answer that question. Yeah, well, I talked for about 5 minutes. I'm like, in my head, I'm going, answer his question. I haven't got an answer.
All right, so I'll break it down a bit then. Why did you start doing the online? When did you start doing them? I found them a year or so ago. When did you start doing them? Why did you start doing them?
So about 2019, something like that. I had a lot of ideas for sketches and things like that. But to make something, as you know, if you work in television, it's a big job to make even a small sketch of 2 or 3 minutes. You've got to get, you know, at the minimal amount, you've got to get a cameraman, a sound man, you know, you've got to get, well, you might arguably you need a director and a producer and all the rest of it, blah, blah, blah. And then I thought, well, why don't I just do one on my phone, which is what I did. And I always had this idea for a while of some of the characters that do a very, 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 very small detail. Like, as in a very minute, detailed character thing that I tried to do live a couple of times, and it was fine. It went well, but it was like, no, I want it to be so nuanced and so small that you see it up close. And then I just kind of really, it was accident. I just did one on my phone, and I thought, should I just post this online? This was in 2019, something like that. So I'd already had, and that really was, as soon as I did one, it changed everything. I thought, oh, right. And even now, I haven't had a single idea that I couldn't film on a phone. There's nothing you can't film on a phone. Or on the smallest device you have available. Whatever you have, you can do it. You know, you can cheat the other stuff. Some of the ideas I have are like mad, you know. But then I think to myself, well, so, for example, I've got this one at the moment. I haven't done it yet, but I sort of was messing about with it. Of a guy, you ever been at a barbecue? This will ruin it if I put it out, because everyone will know the premise already. I've got this one called Dad Pretending to Not Be Scared of a Wasp at a Barbecue. You know the thing that dads do, where they go, just stop it. Just get it away from you. Like the kids go, oh. It goes, just get it. It's nothing. And then for ages starts batting around and basically throws a spoon, it breaks a window, and it's just this chain event of things like he catches fire on the barbecue, the house burns down, the whole, and then he just saw the earth blowing up eventually, or whatever, like a stupid joke like that. And I thought, oh, you can't do that. And I thought, well, of course you can. You just cut the footage off YouTube or whatever. You just find a clip of it. It's funnier, you know, you just make it look daft like that. Just a guy trying to swat away a wasp at a barbecue. and it ends up in this, you know, cataclysmic event of just the whole street gets burnt down or whatever. Yeah,
that's why I love all the stuff you do. It's because it is just the small details. That's what you've noticed, is the little details that humans do, which makes me laugh. Especially sort of when you do the sort of like the mum trying to talk to her son or one of those, or the, you know, all those things are like Christmas dinners and stuff. I love all that sort of stuff. It's just a great observation. But the problem is, Alistair, there's no money to be made in this sort of stuff. I had talked to Bob Mortimer about this, actually, not because, you know, Bob does Guy on the Train and stuff, where he, you know, give you a cappuccino and all that, which I love and all that. And I said to him and Vic have started, because I think it's a real problem for a comic, is that when you put stuff on social media, it's kind of got to be funny, and then you're kind of giving away your material. Now, obviously, you've created a great genre there for yourself, but there's no money in that, is there? Was the idea that you build up the profile and then you go and take it out on tour, or was there no idea? You just was bored and thought, "Fuck it, I'll stick it online and see what happens."
Oh yeah, there's no idea. Yeah, it's more once I have the idea, it's quite hard to, you know, to just leave it. You think it sort of nags away. You're like, "Oh, right." Most of the time, some of them I think that's going to be such a chore to do because it becomes really complicated in my head. But over the space of a week or something, it writes itself in my head, even if I don't want to, and then I end up doing it. And just think, I mean, there is, people do monetize it. I've got a thing called a Ko-fi account, which is like buy me a coffee thing that people use now. It's kind of like Patreon, but it's not a subscription model. Although they do have a subscription model on it, but it's mostly you pay someone £3 for a coffee or whatever. And I occasionally put that up. I think people do that now. If they put stuff online, they go, "Hey, you can contribute here," and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it does monetize itself in the things that I get a lot more work on things, say acting in things or opportunities for writing deals and stuff like that. You know, that's what it does give you, is people going, coming for a meeting, you know, TV companies or film companies going, "Have you got any other ideas?" And then you can go, "Yeah, I've got this and that." So it's essentially a calling card. So there are ways you can monetize it, in the sense that, well, I do Freedom Films, you know, I show them as films in the cinema, which is one way of doing it. But the way to monetize it is either that Ko-fi account or the way it can lead on to other things. I mean, most of the acting jobs I get now, a lot of actors, if they listen to this, will be really annoyed about this, but it's true. Like, I get writers DM me and go, "Do you want to be in our show?" And I go, "Yeah." And that's literally my audition process. They just go, "Do you want to go in it?" I go, "Yeah, yes, please." I think, "Oh, this is great." But not, sometimes I audition, but mostly, I mean, a lot of things I just say no to now. And the other thing I do is Cameo, an app called Cameo, where you can make videos for people and they pay you for birthdays, wedding, whatever, that kind of thing. And a lot of the time they're asking for the characters that I do online. They go, "Oh, can you do the punk squirrel for my mate Brad? It's his birthday on Wednesday," or whatever. You know, so there are ways to do it, but it's not a traditional route. I mean, certainly no, people voluntarily, the nature of the internet is, people do consume a lot of things for free, and they kind of get annoyed if you ask them for money.
Well, actually, interestingly, Cameo, they ask me on a weekly basis whether I'm going to sign up, but I don't have an act, and I don't want to do it. But I see, because every now and then you put them out, the ones that you do, and you've got an act, and you're able to produce some material, so I think it's value for money. If I'm doing it, it's a bit like that other fella, Nigel Farage, doing it, who hasn't got an act either, and just goes, "Vote right wing." But you know, it's like, for me, it's just pointless me doing it, you know, whereas for you,
right,
I think it's really nice because, you know, I would want to get one off you, because you would sort of go, "Oh, you call yourself a TV presenter or whatever," you know, and you just take the piss a bit, and it'd be quite funny.
I would.
All right, I'm supposed to be asking you questions, so I'm going to ask you some questions. What's the best moment of your career? Let's start with that one.
You see what I mean? Just this is where it goes off the rails.
Yeah, but
I guess the first film I did at the Prince Charles Cinema. So what happened was, I was putting these videos online, and someone, promoter, said to me, "Can you show these in a cinema?" I thought it was a joke. I said, "I can't show them in the cinema." So we booked out the Prince Charles cinema in Leicester Square in London, and it sold out very quickly. That point was like, oh, this is a thing now. So that was 2019, and I just called it Volume 1 because I couldn't think of another name. And it was just a bunch of videos for an hour and a bit, and I come on and did a Q&A and stuff like that. But it was just a fun night. And, people can laugh more at that than anything I've ever done. So that it was really, that point I thought, oh, right, I wonder if I can do this then. It's a way to, it's a different type of show. It's a film. It is a film. It's a film about England in 2019, arguably a longer period of time. And then in 2020, the pandemic hit, and I did another film. I called it Volume 2, and it was a lot of pandemic stuff because there was also a lot. So 2019, it was kind of the back end of Brexit, and there was a lot of, there was still, this country had still become a bit kind of polarised, majorly polarised, or there was a lot of mad stuff happening. And in 2020, you had the pandemic hit, and again, there's a lot of these weird conspiracy theorists, it was a tough time for a lot of people, understandably, but you had the anti-vaxxers and you had all this stuff. And now we're kind of, we're still in that a little bit, but the third film I did was much more, I could do a lot, I was a lot freer with things, and you don't want to get bogged down in topical stuff too much, because it ends up being quite depressing. So the one I just did a third film at Prince Charles, which was much more things that I had at the back of my mind that are not necessarily to do with specific cultural or political moments, but people with certain attitudes that you could argue.
Hold on, is it new content?
Yeah, there was a lot of new things in the third film. Yeah, so when I do the films, I keep back some stuff. So in the new film, there was maybe a third of it was stuff I've never put online.
Oh, I'm not happy about that.
Well, I will eventually do it, but...
yeah, I was going to say, what about us?
Well, what about you people who want stuff for free? Eh?
Yeah, it's what about us?
Yeah.
But we're the ones who made you by watching you for free. So you can't deny us.
Yeah, I don't need
us,
you anymore.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because I start watching you I'll be honest with you, Alistair. I hope you don't find this too offensive, but I didn't really know much about you until I started watching your videos. And then suddenly I'm watching things like Flowers and you turn up. And so, you've got actually your job as an actor as well, and so it was you. That's how you came to my attention, though, through these videos.
How did you discover those videos out of interest? My ones.
Do you know, I have no idea at all, but I remember them really cheering me up because I felt they had integrity, and I felt I just thought they were more real than a lot of the shit people put online, which is a bit pantomimey, and it suddenly was. You weren't trying too hard. It was just, you weren't trying to be too, I hate to use this word, but woke. You were just fucking about going, talking about Brexit or something. And it just made me laugh. It was probably someone else retweeting or something that I saw it. But I remember when I found them, I suddenly ended up going to I think I found it on Twitter and then ended up going to Instagram and then just looking through back catalogues and stuff of the stuff I've done, and I really enjoyed it. That must be a good moment when people start, you feel the momentum growing.
I thought you were going to say then, that must have been a good moment when I followed you.
Was it?
Which, actually, now you've said that, that was the best moment of my life. I would say best thing that's ever happened to me.
Who have you got following you? Have you got anyone like... Because I read an article about you the other day and it says Ricky Gervais, retweets it. Because I've got Barack Obama following me, which I always like to
talk
about. I don't know how that happened.
It's not competition, Tim.
It's not competition. he's been retweeting...
I've got Obama!
He's retweeting some of my sketches. did you end up getting like... Is it true? Is Gervais a fan of yours? Does he do stuff with you?
He's sort of liked a few tweets and that kind of thing, I think. Yeah, I've got some sort of like, there's a lot of, sometimes I check Twitter, I notice that something like Ant and Dec is following me. I go, oh, right, that's weird. I sort of wonder whether they watch it. I go, are they watching my videos? Like, that kind of thing. like now and again, someone like that, like, will start following me that I think, oh, right, that's nice, you know, or that's weird. I've sort of, you know, breached something that I'm not really sure, you know, sort of big celebrity people. But I don't really, I don't know what those people make of it. I've no idea.
Does it worry you when you're doing something like when you're doing Jesus yesterday? You know, I don't have a religion. I'm not religious, so I found it really funny. But obviously, people will find that offensive. Does that worry you that you would ever, or you like when you're taking the piss out of Matt Hancock or something? There's probably some Tories who follow you or something who quite like him, or people who feel sorry for him. When you're doing characters like that, do you ever worry that people are going to not react to it nicely?
Oh no, I don't care. I mean, I literally don't care. I don't care. And I don't think I do anything, you know, yesterday I'm mucking about, you know, pretending to be Jesus or whatever. I'm not offensive. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some people would find that offensive. I didn't know, it's when I put up the post that said, I'm going to do this show tomorrow, someone wrote underneath, great comedy. And I looked at his profile and he had like a Christian cross in his thing. And I was like, oh, come on, mate. It's a joke. You know what I mean? And Matt Hancock as well. I know for a fact that some Tory MPs have shared that video around, you know, laugh. Because I'm not being horrible unless the person deserves it. You know, but, I mean, arguably he deserves it. But he's just quite a funny character. He's quite a tragic kind of character to do and intrinsically funny.
Yeah.
As an individual. But I don't think I've done. I mean, there's a couple of characters I do that are very dark, that are funny, and then you stop watching it and go, fucking hell. You know, there's a guy sort of, I do this kind of blinky guy, and he's someone, he blinks a lot, and he's kind of an incel character who is a conspiracy theorist, and it's someone who's spent, the idea with that guy is he spent too long on YouTube. He's watching all these videos and he's gone mad, you know, yeah. With this, the way a lot of people did in 2020, where, and they kind of, a lot of them are still there, that thing where they're suddenly talking about chemtrails, or you remember that point when in a pandemic, suddenly like someone you know will go on Facebook or something and go, guys, we need to talk about chemtrails. We need to talk about 9/11. There's no way that the tower, you know, and you'll go, wait, that's Gary who I went to school with. What the fuck's happened to him? You know what I mean? That point when you're like, wait, I know this guy. Why is he talking like that? And I know people who had that. A lot of people, you know, said to me, oh my God, my brother's turned like this and I don't know what to do. So yeah. Anyway, that character I was doing was like that. It was that kind of guy who's like, what's happening here? You know, and there's still something happening in this country, I think. Something quite dangerous of people kind of, I don't know, getting loose and getting into these mad things, and it's very difficult to tell what's real and what isn't.
Yeah, I don't think it's just this country. I think the whole world, the internet, it's changed the way. And I think everyone wants to believe. No, there's a little bit more to the story, isn't there? I think I've seen behind what's really going on. And There's more to this, you know. So the idea that any of these governments could get their act together to do any of this conspiracy shit is beyond me, because, you know, they're not even clever enough to hide into a sodding party.
Also, I mean, if you're talking about all these people like, oh my God, people deserve to know the truth. The greatest injustices are there in front of you. You've got the government breaking all these rules in lockdown. You've got all this other stuff going. It's all there. You don't need to search around going, Who's the puppet master? It's, you know, these things are going on. What's interesting now is now that, I mean, it's slightly different topic, but now sort of Russia has invaded Ukraine. There's this thing now where for a lot of time there was all these kind of right-wing conspiracy theories online. Now it's out in the open. It's like, it's all there. You know, they're invading a sovereign country and murdering all these people and blah, blah, blah. And it's quite interesting now where maybe previously you could cover up massacres and stuff like that. Is this great content for the podcast?
No, I love it. This is exactly what the people want. God.
But it is interesting that it seems to me there's almost a tide turning against that, where people go, no, these things definitely happened. And Russia are going, no, it was blood. And it just doesn't stack up. Their argument that, oh, the Ukrainians did it to themselves. What are you talking about? Like, So now there's a very interesting thing. I think it's quite an interesting thing that there's a sort of pushback against this stuff now where people go, oh, stop, please.
Yeah, go on. Yeah, no, I agree with you. There is a definite pushback against it because it's getting so tiring listening to it all. I think the whole of, and I think that's why your videos are good, because they seem to, you know, for me in lockdown when I started watching your videos, I started thinking, oh, thank God someone's taking the piss out of this shit, because it's just, you know, do you think it could turn into a TV show?
I mean, Limmy is the obvious example of someone who's maintained that independent production idea of doing everything himself and filming a show in his house and doing his stuff. I think it takes a kind of leap of faith on the part of television. But then I've got a lot of stuff that you could easily film as a longer, you know, as a TV style sketch. If you're talking about something like Punk Squirrel IPA, you know, something like that, you could film it as a proper sketch, like, you know, I the Netflix show I Think You Should Leave Now, if you've seen that show with Tim Robinson, it's formally weird, like the sketch is going for about 12 minutes sometimes, it's crazy, but the problem is here, that, you know, the TV's a little bit risk averse, TV comedy in that sense.
Do you think it would work though if you took it and stopped it being sort of, you know, rough around the edges?
Yeah. What do you want me to do? Slam the door? Nah. People should not give me any opportunity. I cannot stress that enough. the other thing is, you wouldn't have to. I mean, why polish it? You know what I mean? Just leave it is. Like, do something interesting. You know,
The characters I like are the ones, the sort of awkward men. I really like that. Like the guy in the coffee shop who decides to hit on the waitress and stuff like that. Because A, we've all got mates who do that shit. And B, we've all done it ourselves by mistake. Or we've said something, or we've thought, you know, oh, they quite like me or something. You know, and I love that. That sort of like little, that little observation. They're the stuff that I actually did it on my show the other day, actually. I asked one of the guests to stand up, and then I realised that I was being a bit creepy. And but I did actually say that. I said, "I'm really sorry about that." I said it live on air. I said, "I'm being a bit creepy." I was it just didn't work. It didn't work. But you know, there you go. Yeah. All right. Listen, I'm supposed to be good. We've asked two questions. There's 15 of these. Jesus Christ, we're gonna be here all night. What's the worst moment of your career? You got one of those?
Not really. I don't have anything bad. But occasionally people DM me and go, actually, what you'll find is, if you look at the evidence, masks don't actually work, or, you know, that kind of thing, or like how Trump's actually a nice guy, or whatever, just some nonsense like that. I wouldn't say it's the worst, because, you know, I don't care, but...
All right, what does success mean to you? What would you really want to do? Would you rather end up being, I know you want everything, Alistair, but would you rather be like acting in big films, movies, getting lead roles, or would you rather be following this thing through to make it so it becomes a huge, or something else? What does success mean?
Well, for me, I just want to keep doing, to keep gradually increasing the parameters of what's possible with what I'm doing. But also, I have got opportunities now with TV and film where I can develop some of the characters I've done online into a bigger format. So everything is an extension of what I do now. It's not like if one of these things comes off, I go, right, I'm not doing anything online ever again. You know, it's all, the root of everything I do is online. Everything else is an extrapolation of that. You know, I've got this kind of film idea I'm working on that's, you know, sort of based on a character that I do online. So it's really, it's expanding those ideas into maybe bigger formats, or, you know, building outwards. You know, at the same time, sometimes I think, well, if it ain't broke, you know, I can just keep going doing what I'm doing and I'll be fine. But it's just really, you know, about not getting bored. So,
there's different, you know, I can go in a lot of different directions and do something a little bit bigger. The only thing I'd always want to retain, I think, is keeping it as much in my control as possible. You know, if you're talking about a bigger format like a TV and film and stuff like that, I think that's really important for anyone. You know, if you're writing something, to go, I need to try and maintain as much control as possible, while at the same time understanding that other people can contribute, you know, their own skills.
I suppose the real meaning of success, though, is the love people have for your content. I mean, it's nonstop.
By the way, I appreciate how you've worked it your way back here to the original question, which I neglected to answer in any meaningful way.
Yeah, that, well, yeah, but that must mean something to you, because, you know, I mean, when you've got like the likes of TV's Tim Lovejoy saying "I love your stuff," then obviously that must mean something. It must be amazing when people sort of contact you and tell you they love your material and stuff. Surely that's it. That's what it's all about, right?
I think the thing I like is that the ones that I do are that have the most minute, small detail on them. If people like them, I go, okay, good, because that's the ones I wanted to do. You know, something that, if you're talking about, if anyone's listening to this and don't know who I am, probably most people, it's a video called Man Trying to Impress a Barmaid. If you watch that one, that's got the one that you were talking about a minute ago, it's got very small details in it that I'm really, really pleased with. And when people like that, I go, okay, good, because I don't know anyone else who can do that like I do it, or anyone else who is doing it with that amount of attention to detail. Because it's very easy to do videos like that broader and bigger, and you would probably get more traction online if you did a bigger, broader kind of character, but I'd feel a bit mucky. So, you know, that's the thing that I like, is when people appreciate those very, very small things. Mm. It's probably a smaller audience of people, but it's more rewarding.
Oh, no, I loved it. All right, next question. Have you seen a ghost or a UFO?
Let me just say something. I was thinking, was my answer really boring then? Because I answered the question, you went, yeah, right, next question. Have you seen a ghost? I gave like a really detailed, honest answer, and you went, yeah, whatever. Have you seen a UFO?
I was just thinking about the listener. They were probably going, yeah, all right, but can you get some good can you get some good shit? Like, is he a mod, or has he seen a ghost or a UFO? All this other stuff's nonsense. Yeah, whatever. The nuance of his character's bollocks. Yeah, ghost or UFO. Have you seen a ghost or a UFO, Alistair?
No, never seen a ghost or a UFO. I used to have a book of UFOs when I was a kid, and I was obsessed with it. But yeah, unfortunately, never seen either. No.
Would you like UFOs? Would you like aliens to land? Would you like it?
I've got enough to worry about. I don't know what they'd want. You know, the only scenario I can envisage is a sort of Independence Day style one.
Yeah, where they try.
In which case, we're fucked. We're fighting each other. You know, we're too busy. We've got our own wars going on. Maybe we should say that to them. If the UFOs come down, we go, we're going to ravage your planet. Go one thing at a time. We're dealing with Russia here. We've got all these problems here in the Middle East. We can't be dealing with this at the moment.
Come back in 10 years.
Come back. The thing is, we wouldn't fight them, because there'd be no coordination between countries. We'd just be arguing.
Yeah. But would you rather die naturally or be killed by, I don't know, an alien holocaust?
A great question. I'll be honest, that's blindsiding me a little bit, Tim.
I just think they're right. And I know this is kind of like a really bizarre thing to say, but I'd hate to die and then the next year the aliens came down. You know, I'm dead, I'm gone. And then we find out this. I'd like to see that. I'd rather die by the aliens than not actually know they existed. Because, yeah,
cause
I quite like the idea of the aliens. So, you know, I'd quite like them to be, you know, I'd like to see it. I mean, that's kind of...
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Well, my retirement plan, really, I mean, I haven't really done much financial planning, so it was, it's sort of in the back of my mind, it's been, there's going to be an alien invasion and I'll probably end up, you know, joining the alien freedom fighters or something and try and kill
them. I mean, yeah, but
die during that.
When you say you've not got much, you know, pension or retirement plan, you assuming you're going to be paid then as a some sort of mercenary fighting the UFOs, you think?
Well, I just thought I'd join up with them. I assume you get food, you know, as you join up. And,
oh, so you join the alien army or the humans?
No, no, I'm joining the humans to fight the aliens. And I'd probably think, I mean, I don't stand up. You know, if they've made it all the way here, from up there, then I don't think our like weapons are probably going to be very good against them. But I'll give it a go, you know. I'm up for a challenge.
Yeah, but maybe the only good bit of tech they've got is getting here, and their guns are like, they're the worst. They're like pea shooters, like laughable. Then they're in trouble.
They come down with their pea shooters and like, right, we're going to take over your country, and then we drag out our nukes and start blowing them
exactly.
up. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Should we go on to another question?
Sure.
What do you
is
do
it
for
about aliens?
No. Oh. No, I'm moving on from that. What do you do for fun? That's my next question. I've got a better one than that. Stop, don't do that one. I've got this. What were you like at school? There you go, I like that one. What were you like at school?
Just a kind of normal, quiet kid. I was very shy. I didn't really talk to anyone. Had a very couple of close friends. I was kind of on the peripheries of stuff. I didn't get involved in stuff a lot, you know. And then became a bit more boisterous in teenage years, maybe stretching into kind of adolescence and a bit of, you know. And then, and then that's it, you know.
You always say on your... You sometimes do little messages on your thing, sort of saying like, "Oh, here I am. I'm doing self-loathing or something like that." You know, kind of is that really you, or is that just a bit of more comedy for us?
Yeah, that's probably me. Yeah, I think. Yeah, I don't have a particularly persona, you know, although. If I'm very sort of down, I probably won't tweet about it, you know. If I'm out the other side of it, then I'll tweet about it and go, I'll pretend that I'm down then.
Right.
But you know what I mean? You don't, sometimes you're not in the mood, you're like, oh, occasionally I do actually, you know, and then just quickly delete it. Oh, shit. It's a funny thing, social media, because I'm very honest online, I think. I mean, I just say whatever's in my head, really.
Yeah. Which one do you do more of, Twitter or Instagram or a bit of both? I know you do a bit of both because I follow you on both, but...
Everything goes on both. Twitter's a bigger thing for me. I think it's because sometimes I do kind of political ones, and the way Twitter works is, the algorithm of it is that retweets mean more people see it. With Instagram, it's slightly different. You haven't got that. You know, you can share one of my videos to your story, or you can send it to a friend or whatever, but it hasn't got that exponential growth mechanism that Twitter has. Although with Instagram, I do have quite a lot of followers on Instagram for someone who has no TV exposure or anything like that, which I assume is just built from off the back of people sending it to their mates and things like that.
My problem with social media is every single comment you do, there's a reverse side to it, and I just can't be bothered with entertaining them. So like on Sunday brunch a few weeks ago, we were discussing, I can't remember what we were discussing now, and then we, oh, there was, that was it, it's John Travolta in a supermarket, and he's in North Norfolk. Did you see this? He turned up in a supermarket in North Norfolk, and eventually one of the people went and got a selfie with him. And my observation was it was not the people having a picture with John Travolta. I went, look, they're in the lazy fruit section. Lazy fruit to me is like people who can't be asked to cut up their pineapple or their mango or melon, and they buy it. So I started calling it lazy fruit. And then Simon, my co-presenter, started going, oh, I love the chopped up orange. I'm like, you're kidding me. Like, and I had no idea that people would have ready peeled. I mean, like, how hard is it to peel a bloody orange? And so I started calling it lazy fruit. And I thought that was quite funny, you know, just a little bit of a, you know, take on people can't be asked to cut their fruit. And then they put it in single use plastic for you to have. And then there was like it was small, but enough of a backlash because lazy fruit apparently is very useful for people with disabilities. And it's like, oh, yeah, of course. But, so then I feel really bad about using the word lazy fruit. And it's, I just can't be asked to get involved in anything. Cause it's
so funny. Yeah. It's like anything you say can be, that is a very social media phenomenon where anything you say, someone's going to go, oh, that's a bit out of order, isn't it? Yeah. You could say, I said, look what you could tweet. It's a lovely sunny day. Someone will reply and go, oh, cheers for thinking about my skin cancer. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing.
That's it, isn't it? It's absolutely true. And that's what I was saying to you earlier. You're being Jesus and you're going, and the Romans, you know, and they go, can you carry your own cross? And you're going, well, Jesus Christ, you want me to walk up that hill and carry my own cross or whatever? And I'm just watching it, laughing, thinking, Jesus, I mean, sorry to blaspheme them, but there must be so many people, Christians, going, how, oh, it's such an important part of it. They carried his cross and he's just taking the piss out of it. And you're, you know, and you know, the head of thorns, you're going, we're going to give you a hat. I found it really amusing. You give me a hat, it's going, and you're thinking, oh, that's great. It's going to shave me. No, it was thorns. And it's like, I just thought there's going to be people, you don't get that backlash, or you do?
I mean, probably what'll happen, I'll get a notification from Instagram saying, yeah, we've had a number of complaints. They might take them, they might ask me to take it down. I mean, they'd be in an awkward position because it was a charity fundraiser for UNICEF. Maybe they won't take it down on that basis. But Instagram are much touchier than Twitter. You know, they're very sensitive to what you can say online and what you can't. Twitter don't give a shit. You could post a video of you taking a dump, you know, on a dog's head, and no one would care. You can do what you want on there, but I don't know why Instagram are very sensitive. So, but no, I don't. I don't care. I don't think about stuff like that really. I'm not worried. I mean, I do think about it if I go. I don't want to offend people who marginalized anyway, or I spend a lot of time thinking about that, where I go, I don't want someone to be offended. You know, I'm very, very careful. A lot of my characters that I do are kind of very coded, subtly maybe racist or sexist in some way. But then I'd be very careful about that. Like, I don't want, you know, what the target is there. You know, because the temptation is to do a very broad racist character when in real life, most people are not like that. There's very, very subtle, you know, ways that people exert that power, white people. You know, so it's hard to reflect that without it being, I mean, inevitably people get offended. Yeah, of course. But I mean, I just don't care. I just think, well, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think, just as long as the right people are offended, I'm absolutely fine with it. You know, I mean, if Christians are offended by me mucking about pretending to be Jesus, which a couple of people did take offense to it, but, you know, it's the biggest religion in the world. What's your problem?
I think that's the problem with me is I now finish everything. I'll finish this podcast. I'll finish everything I ever do. And then I have this huge amount of regret. Like, why did I say that? Why did I say, oh God, who have I offended now? Just because everyone thinks everything I ever do is offensive. And it's like, because there's, but it's not, you know, majority of people just don't give a shit. But there's
one of the things is as well, is that you and I have a very different type of audience where people tend not to be offended by what I do because they already know, you know, what I do. If you're coming from a background of a television show that a lot of people watch, and consequently you'll have a much broader range of people with differing opinions watching that type of show, so probably you're more vulnerable to that kind of attack than I am.
Maybe. Have you thought about doing TikTok? Are you on TikTok? Have you done that? Have you
got? I was, but I deleted it because I put one video up, and someone wrote underneath, so this is boomer humor, huh? And that got more likes than the video. So I deleted it.
I'll leave them to it. It's a kids thing, you know. I thought that was quite interesting, though. I thought, oh, well, they're quite territorial about their app. And I thought, I'm not even a boomer. I think it'd be accurate, you know. But, I mean, I think they, TikTok people, they think anyone over 28 is a boomer. So I just thought, oh, I'll leave it. Have you got TikTok?
No, I did it. I had it on my phone for 6 hours. I just thought it was, I thought it was brilliant. That's the problem, because most of those 6 hours I spent looking at it, because it's actually quite cool. It's like, even Instagram Reels, I have to not push that button because they just trap you in, because I quite like watching just little bits of shit. And, you know, so I just stick to the stories now and wait for, I know, you to put a story up or someone to put a story up who I'm interested in. I follow two or three people I absolutely hate as well. And I don't know why I do that. It's like, I just...
Yeah, I do that.
Like, I just get so wound up with this new way of this. All these people who are doing this speed, you know. Yeah, if you just put the idea out there into the universe, it will come back. And, you know, it's that manifesting world. I can't stand listening to it. Like, people are, and I'm watching them get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's the new sort of like religion, isn't it? The universe.
Well, it's also that whole thing is also a kind of quite an old idea, that post-60s kind of spiritual, you know, God alternative thing. But it's seeing a resurgence now from kind of TV stars who don't really know what to do. So they go, oh, I'll just write a book on spirituality or wellness or whatever, or that kind of, like, it's so vague. It's so vague.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I'm taking all the bits from my podcast, because as well as doing celebrities like you, Alistair, I also do a lot of just stuff which interests me. So a lot on gut health, and people have written books on luck, and I don't know, Amy Fuller wrote a book, I'm just looking at the ones in front of me, Will Storr wrote a book on the status game, Amy Fuller wrote a book on fear, and all these people, I interview them all, and then I thought, there's so much information here, I'll take them out and start sticking them on a website. That's now turned into a weekly magazine that I'm launching. And then I did an interview with the magazine, a paper the other day, and they said to me, so it's self-help, just like all the other celebrities doing that. And I'm like, no, honestly, it's not. It's just, I don't have any of the answers. I only have questions. I'm just asking lots of people lots of questions and seeing what's out there. And I'm just putting the information out there. But yeah, it seems to be that everybody now, I've got the answers and here's my self-help book. But a lot of it involves star signs and manifesting. And I'm not sure that is the solution, if I'm honest with you.
And I think also there's a dividing line between practical help. I mean, I do yoga and meditate. I don't eat meat. I'm the exact person I take the piss out of. But I mean, those are good things to me. They're good, healthy things, as opposed to that thing where you're talking about, like, you know, manifesting this or that. If you think it will happen and all that stuff. Although that said, people say to me, no, there's a lot of truth in that. You know, that idea of what do you call that stuff? Self-actualization, whatever. But I don't know. It's worth taking the piss out of the thing.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I can't be asked to get involved. I was about to tell you my theory on it. I'll do it another time. I'll do it in writing and stick it on the thing. I liked your woman, by the way, who goes to the Indian restaurant. That is so beautiful, that, because she's not racist, is she? Have I got this right? That's what I think. She is saying stuff which is vaguely racist, but she doesn't think she's racist. That's she thinks she's being progressive.
Right.
Is that right or wrong? You're looking...
Well, no, no, I don't know is the answer to that. I think it's up to you, really. I mean, I don't try to prescribe what I'm doing. So it's up to people what they think. But I would broadly agree with that. Yeah, I think she's... It's one of those things where the kind of post-Thatcher middle classes use ethnicity as a kind of appendage to their personality or a status symbol. Like, have you been to India? I've been 3 times. Love it. You know, that thing of using it as status, you know, or I've been to Goa. Yeah, oh, it's lovely. You got to go South Goa, not North. You know, that kind of thing. Like, there is a thing that they do. Yeah. I mean, she's, if you watch that video, and if anyone's listening, it's called Sari, that you can find it online. And she's just a woman going into an Indian takeaway and being very over familiar with the staff there because she thinks she knows everything about India is essentially it. And she's
like most characters I do are what I call sort of post-stature middle class, as opposed to a lot of comedy characters that talk like that and they're middle class. Hello there, Roger. Where you think, no, people don't talk like that. They talk like this. You know, that idea of, you know, yeah, going into a restaurant. She's sort of lonely as well, I think. You know, there's a hint that her marriage is not quite right. She talks about her husband eating with a knife and fork. She wants to eat with her hands and all that kind of thing. You know, she wants to be, she's looking for something, I think. It's a little bit sad. And she's completely in her own world. There's no self-awareness there whatsoever.
I just realised why I like your thing so much. And I remember working in radio and someone said to me, I was shit when I started on radio because I'd come from TV, which is all visual. And then this bloke sat me down and he said, Andrew Phillips, his name was, and he ran the station at XFM. And he said, Tim, the job of the radio DJ is to paint pictures. And from then I managed to understand, so I'd just make up shit, like I'd be doing a radio show and a producer would come in and I'd say things like, oh, why are you wearing a squash outfit? Now, he wasn't, but then immediately all the listeners can't take that image out of their mind. And I think that's what your comedy's doing. It's very much white walls in your flat, you in a black T-shirt, always, generally, unless you're putting a hat or a wig on, it's just you and we're having to visualise the character. And I think that's right. Why I love it, because we have to work at it. And I'm right. and I've worked at your woman in an Indian restaurant, and I've come up with my conclusions rightly or wrongly, but I've worked at it, and it's amused me because you haven't just given it to me on a plate, and I think that's why I love it.
Right.
Well done, Asta. Right. And that's the end of our interview. Thank you. I've just summed up your career. And but that's right, isn't it? We're having to paint the images ourselves in our head.
Yeah, it's there's enough there that you can draw your own conclusions. It's up to you what you think. As I say, it's not prescriptive. All it is a scene in a couple of minutes, a little glimpse of a, you know, a place and a person in England somewhere, usually, and like a passing train or whatever. And you've just got this snapshot of a kind of talking head thing. And yeah, it's a little scene played out that you might want to think about beyond the scene. Who is that person? What are they doing? Where are they going home to? What's their life like? What do they think about things? And you're left with that. I mean, I could, because the technology is there very easily now, film that video, for example, with an Indian takeaway as a background. But if I'm doing that, you're not focusing on what she's saying and what the way she's, the nuances of her performance or what she's, you know, the way she acts and talks. I want the minimal amount of props. So she's got one prop, and it is a scarf that sari, you know, she calls it a sari. It's actually a scarf I got in Cancer Research UK down the road. But it's so if they, normally there's one prop, you know, or it's Punk Squirrel, there's a couple, there's a skateboard and a funny hat or whatever. I don't have many, people say to me, oh, you must have loads of props. Not really, because I reuse them a lot. Because they're not important. They're just, you know, there's maybe one. My favourite ones have none. Man trying to impress a barmaid, there's none. I may have put an ambient soundtrack on it of pub noise in the background. I think I probably did. It's something I've started doing recently. But that's it. So it's really, and you never ever see, or nearly never see the other person. So when you're talking about you're doing the work, it's because the conversation is implied. Morning, how are you? Oh, really? Right. So they're okay. Who's she talking to? So get that information in, and then you're doing half the work. You're joining the dots up.
Yeah, it is brilliant. There was one you did recently, a montage of characters. I can't remember what it was about now. And then there was one character which came up, and when you look at all the comments, everyone's going, When are we going to see more of that character? And I thought that was really brilliant, that you'd just thrown a character in which didn't probably say anything or do anything. It was just a man in a hat or something. Right. I can't remember now.
Right.
And everybody went, where do we see more of that character? And I just thought that's fantastic. People are so invested in what you're doing. They want to see.
It's a conspiracy. They very rarely come back. They very rarely come back, I'm afraid. Mm.
Well, yeah. Alistair, we've run out of time here. Before I ask you the final question, can you tell me what you're up to now? What can we see? I mean, obviously, you're doing more of these Instagram stuff. If people want to come and see you, when are you doing your next gig in a cinema or theatre?
I've got one in Birmingham on the 20th of May. There's no point in saying that, it's sold out. And I'm going to be doing some more. But if you follow me on Instagram or Twitter at Mr. Alistair Green, you can see all the dates I'm doing. I'm going to do in some things on Twitch and that kind of thing, which I haven't done yet. But everything I post will be online.
Are you doing any more in London?
Nothing. Am I? Yeah, possibly. I might be doing some sort of live show, but it won't be till the summer. So a few months down the track.
All right. And where can we see you in it? Have you got any movies or TV things or films or anything coming up? Anything we can see you in?
I've done some things recently.
You were in a video recently on my show. What were you in? You were in someone's music video. Who was that?
Oh, was it Self-Esteem?
Yeah, that was it. And we ended up talking to her about it. And then we end up talking about you another time as well. I can't remember the name of the guy now, the actor who did a lot of online stuff like you and ended up in loads of movies. What was his name? We end up discussing you on the show. Yeah, there you go. You don't even watch my show. I can't believe I've interviewed you on my podcast. You should be locked into my show. Right, final question, Alistair Green. What is the meaning of life?
Just try not to die before the aliens come.
That is brilliant. I might steal that one and use that one for myself. I'm going to ask you one more question, actually, because it'll be useful for my online magazine.
I'm worried about that alien answer now, because it only makes sense in the context of the rest of the thing, the conversation we had earlier.
All right,
it?
Give me another one then, if you want.
Oh, I haven't got another one.
All right, well, that's it. You're going to have to live with that, because that's going to go into print.
I don't offer solutions.
All right, and the final question then is, what's one piece of advice that has been invaluable to your life? You can tell our listeners. Have you got a piece of advice?
Just get on with it. Just do it yourself, don't procrastinate too much. Get on with it. There's probably not as many obstacles in your way as you think there are. Just start doing stuff. It's vague, isn't it? Just get on it. Just get on with it. Whatever it is you're thinking about doing, just do it now. So, it's easy to go, well, I can't do it then. Do it then. Yeah. Just get on with it.
I'm not sure how you're going to come across in my online magazine. Your advice is just get on with it, and your meaning of life is don't die before the aliens come. You're going
spiritual, aren't I?
I love it. Mate, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.